Now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
As long as they keep on making animated Star Wars, Hope Molinax and Chris Honeywell will be on the case. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi, a project that began with Clone Wars and now may never end.
If I covered like the top part with my hand, I think it's like the happy trail down to like, I think that's what does it for me.
Oh my god. Okay.
I don't know. And like the credit in his hand almost looks like a cigarette, but like this like sexy Watto picture. Right. I don't know. It's itching a weird part of the monster fucker part of my brain, and I'm just like, huh.
He's more technically an alien than a monster, although in his own way he had slaves.
He is a
so.
Monster. You know what? If he wants to, you know. We should start the episode with that. Hi, everyone. Welcome to
Watto was a monster.
Welcome to New J-Guys and Jedi, a bi-weekly podcast talking about fucking Watto.
I'm not going to leave that part on, but yeah, guys, Hope was getting horny about a picture of Watto.
You're not going to. I was about to share it in the Discord channel. Are you really going to cut it out?
No, I'll leave it in.
We're starting the episode hot.
I don't know if hot is the word. I mean, hey, hot is subjective, right? So, hey, more power to you.
I don't know. Like, okay. Somebody has to love Watto.
Somebody I does. Guess.
Somebody does. So, yeah. Anyway, in this episode, the Bad Batch help bring a new friend and a familiar face from the Clone Wars home to his tribe. We should get out of hot Watto land because we're talking about children now. There will be the return of a Clone Wars character, closing out George Lucas's vision. We're talking about the Bad Batch Season 2 Episode Tribe this week. How you doing, Chris?
Good. You know what, Hope? I think I'm going Slurmcore.
What?
Yeah.
I don't know
think
what
I'm
that
diving
means.
Headfirst and going 100% Slurmcore.
Like from Futurama?
Mm-hmm. S-L-U-R-M core.
Okay. Can you give me more of an explanation?
It is apparently a genre of music. And a slurmcore song seems to usually be accompanied by a video of, say, like the oldest of screensavers you could think of, or just a clip from an old video game. And a gif of of either whoever the song is a remix of, or a lot of times it's like John Lennon's head on a little body with a jean jacket on it doing a little gif dance. And it's a pop song, often from the 80s, but from all over the place, you know, 90s and 2000s songs too. And it sounds like what it sounds most like is something a lot of people might not have ever heard is in the old days when you had CD players and you had a fancy CD player like at a radio station, or if somebody had just bought a really expensive CD player, you could fast forward and you would hear the song going forward really fast, but it wouldn't be sped up like you sped up a tape. It wouldn't go up in pitch like a tape being sped up. It would just be going all through the song like this digital going forward. But it's It's comparable to like if you're watching a music a song on YouTube at double speed. But they take the vocals of the song and they pitch them down just slightly, so they're just a little deeper, and it sounds like the song, but like every gap has been cut out of it, so it's just fly. It's all very spastic, and it entertains the hell out of me.
Okay.
I deep dove into some. As a matter of fact, I think I might open up this episode with a little slurmcore at the beginning for people to figure out what the hell is going on here.
Because when you said slurmcore, and I was like, and I said like from Futurama, I thought you were about to explain something that was similar to like the Wizard Rock movement.
I haven't gotten
people writing music.
I haven't gotten deep into it to figure out why it's called slurmcore, how it got called slurmcore. I'm sure it started out as a joke. I think it probably still is kind of a joke, but it's very enjoyable. There's a Hall & Oates song. The slurmcore version of this Hall & Oates song is fantastic. There's a good Billy Joel one, too.
So, yeah, make it the song of the episode so I can hear it.
Okay. Everybody's just a quick YouTube search away from slurmcore. That's all I got to say. You'll find people with their slurmcore playlists and all that.
Yeah. And then, I will say, if you're listening to this episode, thank you, because I know we've been having troubles with the feed on Apple Podcasts, so appreciate y'all listening as I still try to figure out what the fuck is happening over there. I have yet to figure out the problem. So, RSS feeds, everybody. Find your favorite RSS feed and just put it in that way, because Apple Podcasts is not playing nice with us right now.
Doesn't seem to be, yeah.
I have 3 different Jedi's and Jedi accounts on there, because it keeps not making our feed work on Apple. I don't know what it is about Apple that doesn't like us, but yeah, you can always find our RSS feed and just put it into a podcatcher, and it just magically appears. Like magic. So, I can feel that Chris is like 2 seconds away from a rant about convenience and how it's destroying our society, so I'm going to pivot away from that. Pivot!
No.
Or else we're going to be here for 20 minutes.
No, no, no.
You?
No, 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 no. No, yeah.
Yeah. If you ever want to know the number one thing that Chris and I debate about, it's about how to put out the podcast on Podcatchers. Like, that's our number one debate behind the scenes. Because I'm like, yeah, I would love to be on, like, Spotify and Apple and blah, blah, blah. And he's just like, no.
Spotify is being boycotted right now. For having ice commercials on it. So there's a boycott.
See, I pay for my Spotify, so I never hear commercials.
People have boycotts all the time, and I can't really join in because I've never, like, it's like, I boycotted Spotify as soon as I found out what it was.
That's the thing, like. But you are helping because you just told me and our listeners about it and informed us. So you can help.
So yeah, if you don't like ice commercials, if you don't like ice commercials on Spotify, there's a boycott on. I'm just done with the internet. That like nothing's working right, and they're probably trying to implement AI into the working of everything, and it's probably screwing everything up, including like Apple Podcasts. You know, there's probably.
Weather Channel just had a segment about how to spot like AI weather information, like, and I was just like, oh, we're reaching that point of this world.
Yeah,
so anyway, between hot Watto and that and
AI, we're in hot Watto tonight.
aren't we so hey Chris, how you doing?
Pretty good. Oh, wait, like I said, I'm Slim Corin. How are you doing?
Good. This is Chris. I'm Hope. We don't know how to podcast.
If the last couple minutes of us talking got a little depressing, just go to the Slurm Corps and get a hot injection of life right into your main vein.
My cat is cute. Zeb is podcasting next to me and taking his nightly nap. He just stood up, stretched, and flopped back over again. I've been doing good, honestly. I've just been working. Star Wars Visions Season 3 came out, though.
Just saw today that it did, but I haven't had time to watch any of them yet.
So here's my very non-spoiler feelings about Season 3. So just a reminder, Season 3 returns back to Japan. They're all anime studios, and there's three sequels. It has a sequel to The Duel, a sequel to The Village Bride, and a sequel to The Ninth Jedi. And The Ninth Jedi one is definitely setting up The Ninth Jedi series that's coming out next year. My feelings about Season 3 is I think that Star Wars Visions is my favorite thing out of the Disney era. It actually might be one of my favorite Star Wars ever made. Like, it's up there with, like, Rebels and Clone Wars. Like, I love Star Wars Visions.
Is there a butt coming up here? Are
there's a slight butt. Slight butt is poking out from the back. I think this one, my expectations were too high. So when I watched it, I thought it was good, but not great. And also, since 3 out of the 9 shorts were sequels to Season 1 shorts, it felt very safe. Because there was no bad short. But there was, like, no highs of, like, Screecher's Reach. Or, you know how much I love Screecher's Reach and Tatooine Rhapsody and Spy Dancers? Like, Screecher's Reach rewired my fucking brain about how I think about Star Wars. It completely, like, dismantled what I knew and loved about the Star Wars universe and, like, recontextualized it and rewired my brain. None of the shorts did that except for Black, the last one. The last one is a fucking masterpiece, and it's incredible. And so, like, but none of them are bad. Like, they're all great. Every single short had a moment where I was just like, oh, that's cool. I like that concept. Like, there's ones where I was like, okay, I'm going to have to rewatch this, like, multiple times. This is the Akakiri of the season. I have a feeling the more I watch it, the more I'll like it. But it doesn't have the highs of the previous season. And I think a lot of that is because it's my favorite Star Wars. Like, I have it up on a fucking high pedestal. It's so high on a pedestal for me. It just felt safe, especially since 3. But the fun thing was, because one of them was The Duel, and The Duel is actually one of my least favorite of Star Wars Visions, so I had no expectations about that one, and I really didn't care about it. The Duel sequel blew me the fuck away, and it was awesome, and it was rad. And so I think myself kind of made it fine and good, because I'm always expecting more from Visions. But I also feel like it's the first season that
The bar is set at rewiring your brain. So there's a high bar to reach.
But I feel like even then, like when you get to like something like Season 2, because they were different studios from all over the world, they each got to bring something brand new to the table. But with Season 3 returning to Japan and returning to the anime format, to me, Season 3 felt like it was needing to be compared to Season 1 because they're similar. And so, like, Studio Trigger is back, right? Studio Trigger did one of the shorts. And Studio Trigger did The Twins, the bonkers fucking, like, two lightsaber-wielding twins fighting in space on top of Star Destroyers. And they did The Elder, one of my favorite pieces from Season 1. So when I go back to Trigger in Season 3, I'm comparing it to bonkers, right, crazy, swinging for the fences, going mad, like, insane fight in one of my favorites. And so then, like, I get to Triggers, I'm like, it was really good. But it wasn't like The Elder. It's not like, I don't even remember any of the characters' names. When I watched The Elder, I watched it multiple times. Dan and Tajin became two of my favorite characters. I put them in a fan fiction. Like, I know Dan and Tajin. I'm ready to, like, have full conversations about Dan and Tajin right now. But, like, I can't remember a single character from Triggers. I don't remember any of their names from season 3. And so, like, I guess it's one of those things that I felt like it was a much safer this time around. And it didn't have the swing for the fences, crazy bonkers. Like, you don't have to like the twins, but you will remember the twins. Like, you will remember that short. And it's because it's two people having a fucking wild ass,
yeah,
20-foot long lightsaber fight on top of Star Destroyers in space. Because they swung for the fucking fences. And this time around, I felt like they didn't do that. Like, and even something like the Ninth Jedi sequel just felt like it was set up for the series next year. And something like, and so, yeah, like, it was interesting. I do want to rewatch it. When I was watching it, it was kind of late at night. And also, at the time, our laundry dryer was breaking. And we just got it fixed. But I was doing clothes and washing my work clothes. And it would turn off every 5 minutes to 30 seconds. So sometimes, like, I kept having to stop and, like, turn on our dryer again because the timer thing was broken. And sometimes it would run for 5 minutes. Sometimes it would run for 10 minutes. Sometimes it ran for multiple 30 seconds. And so I kept having to stop that night to, like, go do my laundry and turn it on to make sure I had clothes for work. So I also wasn't watching in the best of conditions. And I do want to rewatch it. But I don't know. There was something about this season of Vision that just didn't resonate with me. You know, like, season 1 and season 2, I loved something about every single one of them.
We'll see how it goes after the second viewing when we actually do the show on it. Or the shows
something
on
that
it.
Something we might do is maybe when we hit the mid-season of Bad Batch, take a Vision break. Because we are coming up on this mid-season of Bad Batch. And take a Vision break after the mid-season finale. But, like, that's a thing. Like, I loved season 1 and season 2. And I just liked season 3. I didn't hate any of them. I liked it. I liked all of them. But I didn't have, like, I didn't have the love and the passion and, like, it was interesting. It was interesting. I'd be interested to hear, like, other people's thoughts on it, too.
Well, but it's like, also, it like, yeah. sometimes with stuff, I feel like this about movies, mostly music a lot more. But, you know, you'll have a favorite band and you'll get their new record and you'll be like, that was good. Some of their best records, but it was good, you know, it was blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And then, like, all of a sudden one song will, like, you'll be like, hey, you know, that song's better. And, you know, and after a while you're compulsively listening to it, you know, so mm-hmm. You never know.
Yeah.
You might not like it even as much next time you watch it, but we'll see.
Yeah, because I'm sort of going through that right now with Hazbin Hotel. Because it's one of my favorite shows. I adored season 1. I love Hello Boss, its sister show. And at the time of this recording, the first 4 episodes are out. And I like the season so far, but I'm not loving the season so far. The first 2 episodes were incredible. And then episode 3 and 4 are just like, oh, this is what we're doing. Interesting. Okay. And again, I think it's because I put it's so high of an expectation that I'm going to have to sit with it a little bit and, like, also kick my own expectations into the garbage and be like, get in there. Let me actually watch the show. So, yeah. I mean, I'm going through the same thing with the second season, Passman Hotel, too. So, it's interesting. So, but yeah, that's what's been going on in Hope World. Hope World! But, yeah. So, Livia, if you guys watch Star Wars Visions Season 3, give me your non-spoilery things in our Discord channel, which, you know, is free to join.
I'll have it watched pretty soon. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We'll have to get the Chris Honeywell take next time.
I just saw it and I'm like, oh, there's an episode up. And I'm like, oh, no, they drop a whole season. So that means all the rest of them are in there. Yeah.
Yep. Every time they drop a whole season. So actually, I think the next episode for us that comes out It'll be the week of Thanksgiving, so maybe Chris can give us his Thanksgiving takes of whether or not he's thankful for the third season.
I'll have seen
season.
It by then for sure, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I actually really want to hear your thoughts on the last one, because the last one, Black, the last one's called Black, and it's very interesting. And it was the one that I liked the most, but I think you would like it for a completely different reason from what I would like it, and it's really, I want to hear your thoughts on that one in particular. I'm glad they saved it for last, because it really ended strong for me, so. And like I said, like, let me see, let me pull up the Bad Batch Season 2. Bad Batch Season 2 episodes, let's see. I'm doing some on-the-spot planning. What are we on, Tribe? So we're actually, the next two episodes are the mid-season finale. So if we do that one, that'd be Clone Conspiracy. Aw, that means my girl Rio's back. And then Truth and Consequences will be in December. So I have a thought of, we had talked about Jaws being one of our commentary this year, because I've never seen Jaws, and this year is still the 50th anniversary of Jaws. So maybe we can do Jaws and then take a Star Wars Visions break for three episodes and then get back to Bad Batch.
Yeah, yeah. I haven't watched Jaws in a long time.
So if you're down with that plan, that would take us into the new year. Truth and Consequences, Clone Conspiracy, Jaws, and then, yeah, we'll be in the new year and we can come back to Bad Batch. So, on-the-spot planning. We're not, like, fancy. We don't, like, do planning behind the scenes. We're just like, yeah, fuck it, let's
I'm
do
just
it.
Trying
you guys get to hear.
I'm trying to remember. I think it's somewhere in Commentary Monthly Monday somebody did Jaws at one time. But it wasn't me.
I mean, we also have the podcast, Is It Jaws?
Right, yeah, so.
Anyway, that's my thoughts on Vision Season 3. You ready to get into this episode of Bad Batch?
I am ready.
Mm-hmm. What'd you think of Tribe?
I liked it a lot. I liked it a lot better than last week's, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed it a lot. It's not the deepest episode, but it's just a nicely done one and done episode.
Well, that's the thing. Like it, and I'll talk about this more in my notes of like why I like it. Like it's continuing and answering some questions from the Clone Wars, because we had the kids arc, which is where Gunji is from. Is from the kids arc of Clone Wars,
right.
And we never knew what happened to those kids. And so when he popped up in the season 2 trailer, everyone was like, "Oh my god, it's fucking Gunji!" And I think it's interesting about how this episode, and again, I'll talk about this more when I get into my notes. But like this episode is also sort of like closing the book on George Lucas's time making Star Wars. And I'll talk about that in a minute, and I'll also talk about that more in my notes. So I like Tribe. I think it's very interesting and symbolic, and I think it does a lot of cool things that are not normal in Bad Batch, which we'll get into right about now. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
The Bad Batch Season 2, Episode 6, Tribe, aired on February 1st, 2023 on Disney+. It was written by Matt Michnovitz and directed by Stuart Lee. Some extra information for you. The Trandoshan Venomor, he's the bad guy, the main bad guy, is voiced by J.P. Karliak. This isn't Karliak's first time voicing a Trandoshan, as he's also the voice of one in Star Wars Visions Season 1 short, The Duel. So, yeah, it was this Vision talk all this day. The Wookiee Yana, the Axis leader, and Gunji are all voiced by Star Wars animation regulars Shelby Young, Noshir Dalal, and Jonathan Lipow. Alright, here's your information about your history dump on this. Before the Clone Wars was canceled for the first time on Cartoon Network, pre-Disney buyout, there was going to be a second Bad Batch arc that took place on Kashyyyk. In the arc, the Wookiees would be facing off against Babwar Venomor, which George Lucas thought of the name. Venomor's group was backed by the Separatist. The Bad Batch, along with Yoda's clone troops, wouldn't see a problem with burning down the trees to help their battle, but the Wookiees would be upset by this. The arc focused on the clones and Wookiees finding a common ground. There are actually unfinished story animatics on YouTube to watch some of these scenes if you want to see parts of this cut arc. The Bad Batch creators pulled a lot from those original concepts for this episode Tribe, such as the Wookiees communing with the trees and riding great animals called Melayas. Those unused Clone Wars episodes were also written by Matt Michnovitz. When Wrecker says, "It's been a while since we've been to Kashyyyk," it's referencing those cut episodes. The design of Kashyyyk is also inspired by Ralph McCoy's concept art on the Star Wars Holiday Special, which I think this episode's actually coming out on the Holiday Special week. No, it's the following week. I'm sorry. It's the week of the 17th. Okay, so, well, it's almost the Holiday Special. Happy Life Day, everybody. It's almost Life Day. I just choked on spit. It's fine. The original cut Clone Wars arc also contains several references to the Holiday Special, according to Michnovitz. And finally, if you need a refresher course, who exactly is Gungi? Gungi. I always say his name wrong. It's Gungi. Gungi is a Jedi youngling that was in the youngling arc of the Clone Wars. Along with his friends, Gungi went with Ahsoka Tano and Professor Hugh Yang, who would later return in Ahsoka's live-action show, to go to Ilum. He finds his kyber crystal and he creates his first lightsaber. The younglings were attacked by both Hondo Ohnaka and General Grievous, but Hondo took a liking to the kids, especially Katooni, who he would later name a ship after post-Order 66. It was unknown what happened to these kids until this episode, when Gungi was revealed in the Season 2 trailer, but at the time of this recording, the whereabouts of the other kids are still unknown. They're probably dead. Them kids probably dead.
They got 66'd.
You know, I can't remember if it was, I don't think it was an official source, but somebody had talked about how Hondo had named his ship after Katooni, and because we actually see the Katooni in later media. I think it's the ship we see in Skeleton Crew, in the background of Skeleton Crew, actually. That might be the Katooni. But anyway, somebody, long story short, some fan was talking about how he doesn't know what happened to her either. So he just assumed she was dead and he named his ship in her honor. But I do know, like, some fans ran with it of, like, oh, this is official confirmation that Katooni is dead because he named his ship after her. And it's like, no, that's not how things work. She's not officially dead to our knowledge. Hondo just probably thinks she's dead when he saw Order 66 happen. So those are two very different things, human beings. Please use your media brains. I say as my media brain's not working. Oh, hey, you know who else's media brain isn't working?
Oh.
Yoda. Happy Life Day.
Good. Yeah, whatever. Life Day, Schmife Day.
But Life Day is the best day. It's almost here. You get to wear your robes. It's almost Life Day. And then Mala comes along.
Oh.
And she has...
Yeah. Mama. Yeah, okay. Trying to trick Yoda.
The look that Chris just gave me, because he loves Mala, but he's also being Yoda right now. Like, he just gave me the dirtiest look of, like, you're making me say bad things about my girlfriend.
Yeah. Yoda. Anyway. Yoda likes them slimy and moist, not hairy. No.
But then you can dry off on them. You just kind of like roll around on their stomach. Like you're taking a dirt bath, but on a Wookiee tummy, and it's just
Save the moisture. Yes.
Mm. It's good conditioning, though. I just imagine Mala just like rubbing you on her body just to like condition her fur.
Wookie might nice put and, like, Yoda oily. Right in the pot. Yeah.
Do you think they would eat you? No, huh. But you were friends with the Wookiees, though. You were with the Wookiees when Order 66 happened.
Yes, but well-fed Wookiees, yes. So.
Yeah, but yeah. They also, like, helped protect you and save your life.
Mm-hmm. Because make it hungry later, you know?
Yeah, that's true. If you were all stranded on an island,
Wookiee's not stupid, just hungry.
True. We learned that with Wrecker.
Yeah.
Well, I actually, speaking of Order 66, all this, like, sad... The sad talk about killing Jedi and children and blah, blah, blah. I was curious about this, because we found another survivor from Order 66 in this episode. And I was just curious, are there any Jedi friends that you miss who you think died in Order 66? Any friends that you miss at all?
Oh, all of Jedi Cool Guy Club. Yoda and his friends had Jedi Cool Guy Club. Yes. Started by Yoda and Sifo Dyas. Yes.
Really? Ooh. Used to,
joke with Yoda. He and Yoda would roast each other, we would. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yoda would call him Sifo Dumbass. Yes. He called Yoda Yo Dummy. Yo Dummy, Sifo Dumbass. Yes.
So, was, Jedi was Wet cool Blanket guys Windu?
Club. No.
Was Wet Blanket...
No.
He wasn't?
No, we all smoke cigarettes. Have secret meetings, smoke cigarettes.
What are you, 50s villains?
Look at naked pictures of many different things. Yes.
So Wet Blanket Yoda's Windu was not allowed?
No, there was... many friends, you know, you've had Fonzo McCool.
Fonzo McCool?
Boko Maru. Brick Bracco. Brick Bracco, cool guy. Pooldo Nut. Dimsu Plagu. Very, very weird guy. May Tagrapar. Fisto Fisty.
Fisto Fisty? Was that Kit Fisto's name?
No, Kit Fisto's not in
Oh, no. I was about to say, is Kit Fisto fisting people?
No, cool guy. It's called Cool Guys Club, it was. Not,
I mean,
normal, boring guys club.
Fisting was... is not... Okay, we're not going in that direction. But if Kit Fisto is fisting people, sign me up.
Yeah, but Kit Fisto, but Fisto Fisty, double fisty.
Oh, so he has two hands. Got it.
Hulk Hoganow. Kenny Jones. Kenny Jones, cool guy.
Yoda, I think you're just making up words now.
Quando Palarupshanak.
Are you trying to be like cool, like what the cool kids called the Riz?
Laszlo Polk. Nikolai Pipovline.
Isn't Laszlo Polk a character from What We Do in the Shadows?
Maybe. I don't know.
I'm Yoda just a normal knows not human
of
man.
What people do in the shadows. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe he was in shadows. I don't know. He was a little
I'm just
short,
a normal human man.
Just remember was a little short guy. Shorter than Yoda.
So, okay. So you miss your cool guys club. Yes. I'm sorry that your friends aren't around anymore.
Yeah, all dead.
Well, maybe some of them are like Gungi, and it turns out they're actually alive, and they made it.
No, we'll Yoda buried them all.
Oh, all of them.
All of them.
Did you, like, one by one?
Yes.
Were they on Kashyyyk with you when Order 66 happened?
Small grave. Yoda had to cut them up with his lightsaber.
Oh my god!
Very traumatic for Yoda, it was.
I'm sorry. You know, I think that... I don't have a segue out of that, so I'm just gonna send you on your way, Yoda.
Okay.
Go to therapy.
Yoda hopes he wasn't a bummer. Well, okay.
Yeah, it's,
You asked.
I did. I went from, like, I think he's just making up words to... Oh, he cut up all his friends.
Maybe just general questions are better than personal questions with Yoda.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, you know. I like walked into that one and I was just like, I don't know how to get out of this now.
I heard that one. I'm like, how could this one go wrong? That sounds like just a normal question.
I know. Though I am excited about the prospect of Kit Fisto fisting. That sounds like a fun night. I know what I'm thinking about tonight.
And his boyfriend, Patrick Fitzfitzo.
Actually, I was just thinking of a fanfic that my best friend has written.
It looks like you're still thinking about it. Snap out of it, Hope.
Oh, it's a very good Maul and Kira fanfic.
Yeah, actually, yeah. Focus your eyes. Your eyes are going misty.
I was in the car with Colton.
Drools just go drip, drip, drip off the corner of her mouth. No, it's just like
I was
show going on here, Hope.
Yeah, I did, but it just reminded me of a story when I was in the car with Colton. We were driving to Santa Monica to go to the beach. I had just gotten into LA and we were driving out to the beach. And I get a text from my best friend and I look down and it makes me laugh. And like Colton's like, what's so funny? And I showed them and it's Megan texting me. Today has been the day where Darth Maul discovered the clitoris. And Colton just like dead ass stares at me in the back of an Uber and just looks out the window. And I'm dying.
That's the proper response in that situation, I think.
That was a really good fanfic.
Obviously.
That Megan sends me. Oh my god, I had to think about that. It was one of the few moments where I texted her and I was like, my god, you're making me feel Victorian. All I will say is Kit Fisto fisting reminded me of that fanfic, and that's all I will say.
Oh my god, folks, you can't see it. She's mopping her face off with a cloth now.
I'm about to blow my nose. I have allergies.
Okay, yeah, whatever.
What's unsexier than thinking about Darth Maul fisting Kira than blowing my nose into a microphone?
It's sort of the opposite thing. It's sort of the opposite action of Kit Fisto.
We're about to talk about children. I need to like focus. We're about to talk about children. Space fictional children. Fictional space children. I need to focus.
It's okay. I'll mark this episode as mature.
Aren't they all mature?
Yes, they are.
Okay, I was about to say. Aren't they all?
Yeah. Have even if they aren't, they are, just in case. Yeah, you never know. So.
God. Yep. Why the fuck do people listen to us? I will never, ever, know.
I wish we could mark them classy or not on iTunes or Apple Podcasts or whatever, because I would have a smart classy all the time. Adult and classy.
Classy. We are the classiest podcast in the galaxy. Anyway, are you ready to talk about Bad Batch?
I am.
Oh, God, my brain, it feels broken already. Oh, is it always? Oh, Jesus Christ. Act 1! Hey, we open on a space station. And the Bad Batch is landing, and they're all there for a delivery order for Sid. And Sid was like, be careful with these bad guys. They're called the Vanguard Axis. I'm only noting their name because I just wanted to have a note about them later. And we're going to talk about them more. But anyway, they're a bunch of droid criminals because droids have a crime syndicate. And that's neat. and Echo and Omega are left behind to guard the ship. Oh, sorry, I had a burp. Oh, that was gross. Well, Hunter, Wrecker, and Tech are all going to go deal with the Vanguard Axis. And Echo is like, I don't like this place. I'm going to prep the ship. And Omega's like, cool, I'm going to sit here and listen. And she hears in the distance the need of someone in need of help. And of course, being the plucky protagonist she is, she's just like, I'm going to go see what's going on over there. And she runs over and she sees a Wookiee fighting off members of the Axis powers. And she's like, I'm going to be an ally and run in and help him. That was a World War II joke. And so she jumps in to help Gunji. And because it's Gunji, everybody, that's the random Wookiee child. And Echo comes along and he's just like, Omega, you can't just run off into like plot stories. That's not ours. And Gunji sees Echo in his clone armor and goes, oh, fuck, you're a clone. I'm going to die. Run away. And Gunji goes running off for very obvious reasons. That's not obvious to Omega, who's just like, come back, friend. I want to be your friend. Let me aggressively befriend you. Long story short, Hunter, Wrecker, and Tech are just like, why do I hear gunfire? Fuck. And the Axis powers are like, are they with you? And Hunter's like, yeah, probably. I'm so sorry. Here's your chips. Give us our money. And the Axis powers are like, no! You're fucking attacking us! And Hunter's like, fine! And they're in a fight. Everybody fights. And so, as they're all fighting, Gunji sees his lightsaber. And he's just like, oh shit, my lightsaber! And he uses the Force to pull it to him. Does a Kanan Jarrus. Turns on his lightsaber and everybody's just like, whoa, it's a Jedi. And Echo's like, oh, that's why he hates me. Yeah, that tracks. Yeah, that tracks. And, I keep wanting to say Ahsoka?
A super soaker.
A super soaker, yeah. But her name is Omega, not Ahsoka. Omega is just like, Gunji, come with us, we'll save you. And Gunji is not really keen about getting on a ship full of clones, but between the Wookiee traffickers or the clones who are apparently trying to save him, he follows the clones. So they all get on the ship, and Gunji's like crawling in the vents trying to hide from them. And Omega's like, I don't get it, what's happening? And the clones are just like, Order 66 happened and they killed all the Jedi. But they bring Gunji food and Hunter's like, we did not follow Order 66. In fact, in episode 1, there is a kid named Caleb Doom and I let him go. And he went off to have a whole ass show on his own called Star Wars Rebels when he changed his name to Kanan Jarrus. Isn't that cool? And Gunji's like, I don't know what any of that is, but I will eat this Pop-Tart. And he eats Wrecker's Pop-Tarts. And he's, And Gunji was like, look, guys, I'm trying to get to Kashyyyk because I don't know where else to go. There is no more Jedi Order, so I just kind of want to, like, find my people. Cool? And they're like, yeah, cool, let's go to Kashyyyk. So the Bad Batch agreed to take him to Kashyyyk, and that's where they fly off to. End of Act 1. Excuse me.
I like it. It starts out no messing around, just jumps into it, sets a mood. And continues it just like right into the action. I love the way the space station looks. It's all like off center and asymmetrical, which is weird for them being like, you would think a droid operation would be a little more symmetrical, but
Talk about this droid syndicate.
It seems like your worst nightmare, right? A whole crime... Like, if you got captured by a crime syndicate that was basically AI, like, they're going to be more ruthless than living... You know, they're just... If it's to their interest to kill you, they could just chuck you out into space. They don't care, you know? Why would they care?
Yeah, and, like, I just love that concept of a droid syndicate. Because, for one... Why do droids need to have crime families to begin with? Which is a very interesting concept. But two, like, as tech, who is the tech person, is like, I made all the chain codes themselves. They're perfect. And the droids are just like, you're a flesh meat bag who's capable of mistakes. We're gonna look at every single one of them. So, like, they're harder to trick, too. I just think that's, a really fun concept of, like, a droid syndicate. It's neat, because, like, what are they gonna do with money? Why do they need a crime family? Why do they have a crime
they
family?
They want to retire to a farm in the sun or something, you know?
Like, I don't know. Are they gonna make, like, a droid paradise? Like, why do they need money and power? Like, these are that's the fun idea. This
maybe there's
gets
a mastermind
into.
Who programs all the droids to make him money. You know, they just feed.
I mean,
some
they do say thank the maker.
Big fat hut somewhere that's like just been like, look at you suckers! I've perfected passive income. I just have a. They're like bots. They're like people who have bots that go out and advertise stuff. He just sets out his crime. It goes, go out there and do some deals. Bring me back all the money.
I know he's probably going to correct me. So I'm going to preface this by saying, I think in Legends, the concept of the Maker was actually like the god of the droids. Like, it's actually like a real thing. I think. In Star Wars Legends, and I can already hear either Charles's approval or Charles' disapproval in the back of my head.
There's a couple issues of the Marvel Star Wars comics that have references to that in stories in that direction. I love that Jedi's and clones together again. You know, I haven't seen that in a while. So Jedi's and clones fighting side by side. And so that was good to see. My only other note is that is some dusty, bland ass looking food they give Gungi there. And I can't think of Gungi's name without thinking of my neighbor. I had a neighbor. Well, my friend who is the neighbor is Tom, but his sister was named Gunja. So it was almost Gungi. And I don't know. Maybe when she was really young, they called her Gungi too. But that food looked just like it'd been like dried and bleached in the sun. I'm like, oh, yum yum.
It looks like crackers. Like they just gave him a box full of crackers.
I mean, it's like military surplus food, yeah. So it's like sea rations, which are very dusty and bland looking. So it tracks, but it was just like. It looked the like a sewing thing, kit with spools of just like bread colored spools in it and stuff.
I will say, in the new Bad Batch novel, there is a scene where they actually make dinner. And Fee is just like, oh, you guys can actually cook. And they're like, yeah, we just like never have time to. And so like, apparently it's canonical that the Bad Batch actually knows how to cook. But they just don't really have a kitchen and they don't really have time because they're, you know, military dudes on missions. But that's something apparently they do know how to do, according to the new Bad Batch novel.
They probably all had to do duty in the kitchen when they were being trained up and stuff, you know?
I mean, Hunter, like, the scene was like, Hunter's like, I can do the potatoes because I know how to use all the knives. Yeah. He's just like, blah, 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 blah. So, yeah, that is a very, very small scene that I don't mind spoiling in the new Bad Batch book because it has no consequences to plot or anything else. So.
But
they
that's
do actually
all I
know
really,
how to canonically cook.
That's all I really got for Act 1.
So I only have two other notes outside of the droid syndicate stuff because, again, the idea of, like what are they using money for other than to maybe, like, repair themselves and make themselves cooler and better. And then we get into, like, a Ship of Theseus, like, thought puzzle of just like, well, then are they the same droid syndicate if they've replaced all their pieces? I don't know. Anyway, my small note I have is the lead Axis droid. He has that blue color scheme and then the brown crosses across him. He looks like the Pokemon Golett. I had to actually pause and be like, is that a Golett on my screen? It's such a dumb note, but I did have to stop and like Google it, and I was like, yeah, he looks like a Golett. He's shaped the right shape, too. Look at him go. Anyway, so my actual note. I've been playing... The new Pokemon game came out a couple weeks ago, and I talked about that in the last episode. I'm still playing it because I haven't had a lot of time to play it, so I'm only doing, like, a little bit at a time while all my friends have, like, finished it by now. But yeah, I've only been able to play a little bit at a time. So I have Pokemon on the brain. So what's really interesting about this opening scene is pretty much every other media in Star Wars, from Clone Wars to Rebels to all the video games and the books, this meeting is always from Gunju's point of view, where it's the Jedi seeing the clones and going, oh shit, they're the bad guys. So why the Bad Batch is extra interesting is we're seeing it from the clones' point of view, of going, oh, that's a Jedi. I know and understand why this person is scared of me.
Yes.
Even though we did nothing. Because, yeah, like, the moment Echo shows up, Gunji flips the fuck out. And the one thing I wish they actually touched on a little bit more in this episode, and again, this is my ongoing criticism of, they do not know how to use Echo at any point in time. Echo is the only one of the Bad Batch that actually actively worked under Jedi. He worked under Anakin and Ahsoka. He was in the 501st. He worked under Rex. Like, he has experience working with Jedi, which we know from the Clone Wars Season 7, the Bad Batch doesn't, because they don't normally work under Jedi. They have, because they worked under Anakin, and in the comics they work under Mace, Mace Windu, but they don't have a Jedi they're assigned to that they, like, befriend, right, and know and hang out with and blah, blah, blah. But Echo does. And so I just felt like there was a little bit of a missed moment of him just being like sitting with Gunji and just being like, I worked with the Jedi. I know what it was like to be with them. So it's my ongoing criticism of they never know what to do with Echo.
Were thinking of Gunji as a kid, too, because at one point they call him and Ahsoka the kids. So, you know, he probably wasn't thinking of him like the same. He was a kid.
I like that
Jedi.
You called him Mega Ahsoka, too.
Did I say Ahsoka? Yeah, Omega.
Or brains are broken. It's fine. Yeah, it is true. It is true. But I just think this is a really interesting story because it's about the only time we see the story that we've seen in Rebels and video games with Cal Kestis and, like, all these other things. Like, we've seen this story so many times from the Jedi's point of view. So it is neat that we're getting the exact same story from the clones' point of view. So they understand why Gunji is hiding in the back of the ship and wants nothing to do with them. And it's an interesting take that makes the episode feel a little more fresh and new, even though we're rehashing a story we've rehashed so much in Star Wars. So I think that's neat. But that's all I had for Act 1.
Yeah, there's more stuff in Act 2 and 3 to talk about for sure.
Yeah. This was mostly just the setup. So are you ready to get into Act 2?
I am.
I just realized at no point do I ever look up the name of these, like, spider creatures, but no one cares but me. Act 2! Gunji, take the wheel. So, Act 2. The Bad Batch and Gunji arrive on Kashyyyk. And they were in the Bad Batch because there's a cut Clone Wars episode arc that never got made. They're like, we know from a cut episode of Clone Wars that never got made that there's a Wookiee village that away, and then they start walking through the wilderness, but they're also picking up a lot of detections of smoke and deforestation, and Hunter's like, uh-oh, maybe the Empire is here, and Echo's like, uh-oh, that means we can fight the Empire and do a rebellion just like Rex does. Can we go join them with Rex and do what we're always gonna do? And Hunter's like, honey, Echo, wife of my life, you know, you're just wait till next week. Because the next two episodes are for you. And Echo goes, yes, yes. The mid-season finale is the next two episodes. Yes, I finally get to do stuff. And they're like, all right, well, okay. Echo's pacified. Let's walk through the woods. And that's what they do. They just start walking through the wilderness. And then they walk into a bunch of massive spider webs that are blocking the path. Like, it's fine. Why are you walking into spider webs? Are you dumb? and they walk into all the spider webs, and lo and behold, these big old spider creatures come out of nowhere. And the spider creatures are like, why the fuck are you walking to our house? What are you doing here? But it's okay, because Gunji can force talk to the spider webs, and they're just like, oh, all right, you're cool, you're cool. And Gunji's like, don't punch them. And the bunch Bad Batch is like, why would we punch the spiders? And Gunji's like, because that's really relevant in Act 3. If you punch a spider, they'll react. And everyone's like, okay, yes, sir. And so anyway, Gunji leads them through the spider webs, and they arrive at the Wookiee village. That's not there because it's been burned down. And they're like, wow, I guess it really was cut from the Clone Wars because it's not even here. But they find that there's tank tracks nearby. And they're just like, huh, look at that. It's definitely an ambush. And they follow the tire tracks and they find a wild pack of Trandoshans. And they're running around in their tanks, and they're setting shit on fire, and they have a Wookiee captured. And Gunji's like, oh, fuck, I want to go help. And he runs into the fray, and which makes the Bad Batch go, oh, we're supposed to save this kid. And they run into the fray, too. And then a big old fight breaks out, and the Trandoshans are like, why are there clones here? We're working for clones. Are you the clones that we are? Are you guys clones that we're working for? And Wrecker's like, no. And he throws one into the sun. And so, they beat all the Trandoshans, but the Wookiee that they were fighting runs off. And so they're like, all right, well, all the Trandoshans are dead, and the Bad Batch grab a bunch of shovels, and they put out the fires. A bunch of fires for the first time in this episode, which becomes a theme. The Bad Batch puts out a bunch of fires. Because that's what they do. Anyway, after they put up all the fires, the Wookiee who ran off, that was the hostage, comes back, and he's riding this big old cat creature. And he comes with friends, and him and a bunch of other Wookiees take Gunji and the Bad Batch to their village. End of Act 2.
How many times in the Bad Batch and the Clone Wars, and maybe even in Rebels at some point, have people been attacked by giant spider creatures?
So
probably like six times?
Something like that. I will say,
yeah, it happens
these
a
spiders
lot.
In Protect, I didn't put the note in this because neither one of us are video game people, but these spiders are a mashup of original concept art from the Clone Wars episode, as well as these really vicious spider creatures and Jedi Fallen Order, and they kind of had a middle ground between those two. Because they didn't want these to be as vicious as these, like, really hard spiders that you fight on Kashyyyk in Fallen Order. But they also wanted to have, like, a little homage to the original story that was cut from what would have been Clone Wars. So, these kind of, like, kind of middle ground. But, you know, there's the note that I didn't put in the background notes. Huzzah.
I hope they have it in the soundtrack, but I love the Wookiee music that they have when they're going through that. You actually hear like Wookiee voices in
I missed that
in the music. Yeah, there's like in the music, and I was like, yay, Wookiee music. They use the word laser sword. I love it when they call lightsabers laser swords, because, you know, I was thinking about it. You know, everybody's like, oh, they're lightsabers. It's not a laser sword. It is a laser sword. Just like we have. It's like if you grew up all the time and the only people you knew were samurai. All right. You'd be like, oh, that's a katana. But a katana is just a type of a sword. So, you know, it's a Jedi laser sword. I love it. It's a Jedi who have to call it a lightsaber. I'm not a Jedi. I could call it a laser sword.
It reminds me of that joke from Into the Spider-Verse where they're meeting Spider-Man India, and Miles goes, oh, I love chai tea. And he's like, why are you calling it chai tea? It's just chai. Like, you're saying tea. You don't call pan bread. You don't say it's pan bread, because then you're just saying bread. Oh, I love that movie. I can't wait for the third one to come out. Oh, come sooner.
I haven't seen the second one yet. I have to watch the first one and the second one because it's been a long time since I saw the first one.
It's really good, though. Please pay your animators better and don't kill them, fucking Sony. Jesus Christ. Use your K-pop Demon Hunter money and pay your Sony animators better. Anyway, continue.
I love how when the Transdotians pull up on the tanks, their tanks, the Imperial tanks are all like kind of Mad Maxed out with stuff strapped to the side of them.
They're
branches.
Separatist tanks.
Separatist tanks.
Yeah, and because we're still early, and I think that's really cool because we're still so early in the Empire. They're not going to give these guys brand new fancy Imperial tanks that cost money. They're just going to give them old Separatist tanks that they don't need
around
anymore.
In the woods with. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then when they started fighting, I was like, oh, looks like the Bad Batch is just going to be, like, knocking people down and stuff. They should be just murdering these guys, right? These are Transdotian, like, Wookiee skinners, you know, slaver people. No love lost for them. And then I'm like, oh, nope, we're murdering. And then, like, one scene after that, it's like they flipped a murder switch where it was like, they were just sort of knocking people down and knocking them out. And then it was just like, nope, we're just killing tons of Transdotians. I love it. Love it.
I noticed that too, because I was wondering about once the clones showed up, because remember, these are not stormtroopers. These are clone troopers that they're fighting. I was like, are they going to not kill them? They kill the clones. I think this is the first time where they actually killed fellow clones. Because, now, granted, it might have been the Wookiees that killed the clones when they all team up together at the end, because the Wookiees are fighting everybody, and they do just fucking kill the Trandoshans, the Bad Batch being. But I didn't have time to go through it to see if they killed any of the clones, but the Wookiees for sure killed the clone troopers.
This was a murder-filled episode. Wookiees were getting killed, a bunch of the spider things get killed. It's very similar to George Lucas era Clone Wars rather than Disney era Bad Batch and like Rebels and stuff like that. So it was refreshing. I like that murder. I like the murder.
It made me feel it was a nice chance to place the murder.
At a craft store in the model section, and I saw a model of a Chopper. And I was like, I miss murder droid. I miss the murder. It was like $80 for this thing, for a Chopper.
Oh my god!
Or it might have been more. It might have been like $100. It was a lot of money.
Oh my god!
It's probably a rare one or whatever. I don't know. But that's I got for part two. Murder. Did I put? Thumbs up. Like the murder.
Did I put her up there? You did. It just reminded me. You're talking of Chopper. I got a little figure of Zeb.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I also got a little Ahsoka, but it's one of the Disney Infinity figures, and I don't own Disney Infinity, but when I was at Legacy Expo, they had a bunch of the figures, and I saw Zeb, and I was like, I have to have a Zeb for my Zeb, because I'm sitting next to my cat Zeb, and I have to have it. So, anyway. My first note's very shallow. It's, you can tell when I care about a creature because I'll actually write down its name. I don't give a fuck about the spiders, so I just call them the spiders. But the Malayas, the big cat mounts, I love the Malayas. They're so cute. They're just big giant cats you can ride with big old ears.
Giant old bad ears, sort of.
I love them. Round bad ears. I love them. I want to ride the giant cats, please, and thank you. I love that design. And actually, that was an original design from the cut. That's one of the things that was from the cut episodes. There's actually concept art of them for, I can't remember if it's for this episode or if it's for the Malayas page on Wikipedia. But their actual face, like the kind of echoing bat ear, that was their entire face. Was just those like kind of double ears with like little cat face in the middle of it, in the original concept art. So it's interesting to see how they change from where they were originally designed for Clone Wars versus now. So, my next actual note is, I love Wrecker. He's just having the best time with all these Wookiees, but one of my favorite moments is not a very prominent moment. It actually happens in the background. And it's when they first come out of hyperspace and they're still in space and they're about to land on the planet. There's a little moment where Wrecker is about to eat something. He has it in his hand. It's about to go in his mouth. And he sees Gunji watching him. And he gives the kid food. He gives him his food. And, like, that is so much of Wrecker's character. Like, a lot of his character is little actions in the background of episodes that it's just little moments like that. And, like, he has so much empathy. He wants to make sure this kid is taken care of, this kid is eating, and he gives up his food to make sure that Gunji has something to eat. And it's just such a little sweet moment that happens in the background. And I loved that moment. It's such a good little moment for him. Okay. So what I also think is very fascinating about this episode, and I'm sure there's more of it in books, but the only moment that I could recall on screen that I knew about in my recollection and memory was a Clone Wars episode where Ahsoka finds out that a group of Togruden people are captured. And she's just like, I have to go help my people. And I remember us having this talk about almost 10 years ago now, when I was like, you weren't even raised on Togruta. Why do you care? And so, like, what I find interesting about this episode is Jedi going back to their homeworld and experiencing this kind of, like, Jedi version of diaspora. Diaspora.
Yeah,
this, like, Jedi version of diaspora, where Gunji doesn't know the customs, he doesn't know the rituals, he doesn't know how to greet them, he just knows that he needs to be there, these are his people, and he's only seen it in dreams. And I think that's kind of fascinating, to have this kind of, like, you know, he was taken as a child, he doesn't know what tribe he's from, he doesn't know what it is. And so, like, when Yana comes up and greets him, she, like, takes his head and leans in, and he just stares at her for a very long second before he realizes, oh, I'm supposed to lean in too. Because she greets the first Wookiee that way, and he picks up on it, and he's just like, oh, this is a Wookiee greeting. And then he does it too. And you see him starting to pick up these, like, little things throughout the episode of, like, oh, this is how I commune with the trees, and this is how I do this. But it's just really interesting to see him go back to this homeworld, because his home in the Jedi is gone, but he's kind of still stuck between, like, and, like, even then, like, we know from his episodes in the Clone Wars, Hugh Yang actually says in those episodes, you're very rare. We don't have a lot of Wookiee Jedi. Like, you're very rare for your people, and they must be very proud of you. So, like, he was not very common in the Jedi Order, and now he's back on Kashyyyk, where he doesn't know the customs. And I just think that's a really interesting story of him, like, going through this, like, kind of a Jedi version of diaspora. I just think that's neat. I think it's cool. I like the story. I want to see more of him. I just petted my cat. Sorry. He rolled over and his belly is exposed, and it's a trap.
Yeah. Maybe he'll turn up in some of the modern stuff. You'll know because he'll have the one tooth sticking up. They definitely made it so you can spot him as if we see him as an adult, we'd be pretty sure it was him if we saw the one tooth sticking out.
Yeah, so that's the fun thing about him too, is because he's a Wookiee, he could live hundreds of years. Like, he could be on Luke's Jedi Temple with Ben Solo.
Yeah.
Like, he could be there. Or he could have been, like, doing his own thing, going off. Like, he could be in, like, the post... He could show up in the Rey movie, for all we know. Like, that's the fun thing about him also being a Wookiee, is he lives a long time. Like, he could pretty much show up any time from here for the next, like, 400 years of
right,
story.
Right, yeah, exactly. Just like Grogu. So,
yeah, actually.
They got Grogu for a long time. Disney... They thought about it.
I want to see a team-up story of Grogu and Gunji, but it's kind of like almost like the holiday special, because Grogu can't talk and Gunji can only speak Shirley Rook. And so it's just like them garbling at each other for an hour. I'd actually watch it, but I'm the psychopath who likes the holiday special. I'm that guy.
Maybe as Jedi, Disney. both of their like species seem to be very based in nature, so they might be able to like talk to, you know, psychically talk to each other through the Force, you know, because they're more attuned to natural wavelengths, man.
Yeah. Actually, there are, because again, I have Pokemon on the brain, but when do I don't? There are a few random, like, sporadic episodes of Pokemon, especially very, very, very early in the show. They really stop doing this the later you get into the show. But there's some early episodes where, when it's all the Pokemon together, they can just talk to each other. They don't say their names over and over again because they can understand each other. They just talk. They just talk to each other. And so that's how I feel like Grogu and like Gunji would be like, Grogu would be like, I think we should go over there. And Gunji's like, all right, let's go. Jump on my back, little friend. Let's run through the woods. Oh, no. But that would ruin it. That would ruin it. No. Don't like it. Don't like it.
Too much. So, anyway. Too much.
And this episode actually reminded me of Andor. Because it did a thing that Andor did. So, we actually haven't seen it much on screen. But, especially this early in the Empire went, like, using smaller groups to invade for them. Like, we saw that with the Morlana Corps when Cyril was first being a Mall Cop early in Season 1. You know, it wasn't the Empire that was on Ferrix, it was the Morlana Cops. And Cyril, and they were in charge of that, but they were in charge of that area for the Empire, because the Empire didn't have enough manpower to run that area. And so, we're kind of seeing a very similar version of this, because Trandoshans and Wookiees do not like each other.
Yeah.
So, of course, the Trandoshans would be like, yeah, Empire, will invade for you, money. Let's go. Yeah.
We get to keep the pelts, too, probably, you know?
So, yeah, I mean, the bad guys are running around wearing a Wookiee fur the entire time.
I mean, they pretty much established in the original trilogy in Empire that, you know, the Empire Strikes Back would use mercenaries and hired guns. So
yeah, but it's different when it's bounty hunters versus like a group of people. Like the Trandoshan people as like a group of a planet of people do not like Wookiees.
Right. So if you need someone to attack Kazik, and they also are used to hunting Wookiees, so they're used to fighting Wookiees.
So, like, it's fun to see that, I should say,
and stormtroopers are useless and clones are unreliable, so might as well send some Trandoshans in there to do the job right.
But it is a really cool little thing, because it's that, like, kind of rhyming with Andor thing, and, like, watching this show in a post-Andor world, that it was doing this very similar thing, because, like, we don't have that on screen a lot where it's like, no, we're using this group of army people who are not fully Imperial, but they're doing what we want for the Empire, and we just give them money to do it. So, yeah, it's just neat. I like it. So, that's all I have for Act 2, though.
All right. Are you ready to wrap this Trandoshan up?
This Doshan? Oh, that sounds like a dirty word, a Doshan.
Oh, I've got some notes in the next one. You're going to enjoy. They're not dirty, though.
Oh,
but they do. They do involve Doshans. You want
the
to wrap
trans
this?
Kind?
Yes. But it isn't a trans. It is not a trans joke. But it's a Doshan joke.
I can't remember who it is. It might have been Gene.
It's really bad. It's dad level bad. There might be more than one too. No, I'm talking about what I've got coming up.
Oh no, I'm talking about something
I don't
else.
Know. What's going on with you?
No. I'm about to say something completely different. That just reminded me of this one time. I think I'm almost positive it was Brian Weber, where our listener Brian Weber, who is also an old high school friend of mine. I used to accidentally say transdotions with an S, transdotions, instead of trandotion, because, like, my brain was just like, this is how the alien is said. It's transdotions.
I've always said it that way.
But it's trandotion with no S, trandotion. And so when I had the realization on the show that I had been saying it wrong, I'm almost positive it was Brian Weber, and
I've been saying it wrong since 1980, Hope, so don't feel bad.
Well, he messages me and shows, oh, I just thought you were trying to be inclusive. And I was like, no, Brian, I'm just an idiot. It's fine. I wasn't trying to be inclusive to trans people. I was just being a moron. It's okay. But thank you for thinking so highly of me. Oh, anyway, Act 3?
Act 3, let's do it.
Oh, my goodness. So anyway, Act 3, the Bad Batch return to the Wookiees on their little cat mounts, who are adorable, and we love them, and I'm gonna pet my cat. Oh, look at his belly. And they get to a Wookiee village, and they are greeted by the Wookiee leader named Yana. And Hunter is just like, hi, so, we're not clones for the Empire. Which we do see in the next scene, there are clones working with the Trandoshans, so it's understandable that the Wookiees are a little nervous that these clones just, like, rolled up in their house, because Imperial clones have been working with the Trandoshans. And Hunter's like, he's a child. Like, Gunji's a child. Whether or not he was a Jedi or just a normal Wookiee, we were going to bring him home to you because he deserves to be with his people. And Yana's like, I like these guys. Let's feed them. Get them all the food. And Wrecker's like, fucking food, yes. And then Wrecker has the best time for the rest of this episode, yelling like Wookiees, hanging out with the Wookiees. He's eating as much of the Wookiees. The Wookiees respect him. Wrecker has the best time in Act 3. He's having a good time. Anyway. So the Trandoshan leader is a dude named Venomore. He sounds like a Venomorph. Like a mix of a Venom and what are the aliens and aliens called? Xenomorphs. Venomorph sounds like Venom and a Xenomorph had a baby, and his name is Venomore. Anyway, he's working with Imperial clones, and they're all looking around the fight that just happened, and they're like, are those lightsaber marks? And all the Imperial clones are just like, Order 66, let's go get a fucking Jedi! And Venomore is like, no! You're on my planet, I'm gonna get the Jedi, and I'm gonna get paid for it. Fuck you guys, because y'all are employing me, and I'm gonna do it. Hey guys, let's go get all the Wookiees, and also get the Jedi. And they're all like, yeah, high five! And all the bad guys move out. Back with our heroes. Again, Wrecker's having the best. I literally have written my notes. Wrecker is having the best time with the Wookiees. I have no notes other than I love that for him. Literally written in my outline. Anyway, they realize the Trandoshans are heading that way. And Echo is like, Hunter, 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 Hunter. And Hunter's like, what, Echo? What? What? And Hunter's like, and Echo's like, can we fight the Empire now? Please? They're coming. They're coming. Can we finally fight the Empire? And Hunter's like, oh, fine, Echo. We'll go fight the Empire. Echo's like, yes, 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 rebellion, rebellion with the Wookiees, rebellion with the Wookiees, I feel like Yoda, let's go, let's fucking go, ah! But everyone has to go talk to trees first, and so Echo has to sadly wait for them to all talk to the trees, because Gunji watches all the Wookiees go out, and they have to ask the trees permission to help them in the fight, because the trees are their allies, and Gunji is just like, cool, I talk to trees now, apparently. And the trees have agreed to help them fight. So, yeah, a fight breaks out as the Empire and the Trandoshans show up. And all of our heroes are like, all right, remember those very convenient spiders from Act 1? Yeah, let's go get them. And so they lead all the bad guys to the very convenient spiders, who all, like, race out there. And as they're fighting the spiders and all this stuff like that, Gunji sees Venomore run off. So he follows Venomore, Omega follows Gunji, and all the adults go, "Where are our kids? Where did the children go? Fuck, we lost our kids in the middle of war. Well, that can't be good." Well, Gunji is corners Venomar, and Venomar has a flamethrower and is setting everything on fire. And Gunji is like, "Well, I know something that you don't know, Venomar." And he's like, "What's that, kid?" That's his snake noise. Even though he's a lizard. And Gunji's like, "You don't punch spiders." And Venomar's like, "What? What do you mean you don't punch spiders?" And all the spiders show up and Venomar's like, "Ah!" And he tries to fist fight him. He literally just starts fist fighting spiders and starts punching them. And the spiders are just like, "Oh, well, I'm provoked now. I wasn't provoked before, but now I'm provoked." And they take Venomar, wrap him up in spider webs, and they drag him off.
Time to wrap that doshin up.
Yep. And then they take the bounties away, and the day is won. After they murdered a bunch of clones, too. For, like, the first time ever. Anyway. For the second time in this episode, the Bad Batch team up with the Wookiees, and they get a bunch of shovels, and they put a bunch of fire out. And our heroes come back to the Wookiee village to rest. And the episode ends with Hunter and Yana watching Gunji Omega blessing the trees, and Omega's also kneeling down doing the little ritual with Gunji because it had to inspire a bajillion clickbait articles about whether or not Omega was actually force sensitive, which would continue into season 3. The end.
Omega just try when she sees someone doing anything, she wants to copy it and try it.
She's a mimic. That's
all there is to it, you know.
Oh, I will be talking about is Omega force sensitive in a minute. But you go first.
I wouldn't doubt it. I wouldn't doubt that the clones were probably trying to put force sensitive. It was all for Palpy, right? You would definitely want to have some midichlorian action going on there. I like when they're talking to the trees, you can hear these subtle creaking of huge branches, like big wooden creaking sounds. It's very subtle, but it was just nice sound design. Okay, so there's that one point where the tank is shooting fire out, and it hits that one Trandoshan, and you hear him like, "Yay!" So I wrote down Roastedoshan and Trantostian.
That was bad.
And then I have, "Where did the kids go?" Okay, where did the kids go? One kid is a Jedi with a lightsaber and is also a Wookiee. He's a smaller Wookiee, but he's also a Jedi Wookiee. The other kid is the exact same age as them and in many ways is like more advanced than them. So I know
she's
it's like...
She's older than her brothers, actually. She's the big
Yeah.
She's actually older.
Yeah. So where did the kids go? It's like... Don't worry about those kids.
They'll be fine.
those kids will be okay. They're probably better equipped than you. So, and my only other note is as you said at the beginning, you know, they based a lot of it on Ralph McQuarrie's art for the holiday special. Down to the point where I think you can almost see brushstrokes sometimes. There's a lot of just like, and this has been happening a lot this season, is flat matte, non-animated matte paintings, you know? I don't even know if a lot of the matte paintings in this one were 3D or they just seemed to be like flat, you know, old school matte paintings you could almost see the brush strokes in a lot of, you know, there would be like scenes where, you know, there would be medium shots of people and stuff. It would be rendered out Kashyyyk, but where you would see like a big vista all look like a painting. And I loved how that looked. It was great. It was just, yeah, it was like, it was very Ralph McQuarrie. And it's just, you know, there's, we in Star Wars, I feel that we revisit a lot of places, and I think Kashyyyk could have used a lot more. I would have liked to have spent more time on Kashyyyk in, you know, the Clone Wars and stuff like that. I think it's been a very underutilized thing, which is very unusual, because we'll go back to Tatooine every 10 minutes and it's a desert planet, whereas Kashyyyk is fascinating, you know, and it's got this whole feel to it that I want to be in. And it was that's probably why I like this episode so much, is we spend most of the 2/3 of the episode on Kashyyyk and get to actually get some Kashyyyk lore and workings of Kashyyyk that just aren't like,
yeah,
you know, just in a little Wookiee village or anything. It's we're seeing, you know, we're walking around and checking it out. And I like that.
And we're communing with the animals, and like we're seeing how the animals commune with the Wookiees. They're like,
their whole culture, you can sort of see it, and it makes sense. And how they're in tune with the nature. They are an advanced race that uses technology and is intelligent, but they've also got a sort of spiritual, mystical aspect to them. Their architecture is very, you know, it's like the Ewoks. It's very much like the Ewoks, you know. It's everything's made out of wood and it fits in with the landscape of it and stuff like that. So that's how I want to live anyway. I want to live in a Wookiee world. So
I think one of my favorite moments actually in this episode, which we haven't talked about, is in Act Two, when they first arrive and they first see the Trandoshans, and one of the Trandoshans are just like, hey, we found more of those carved rocks. And the leader goes, burn them all down. And they start setting them on fire, and you see the captive Wookiee just start panicking and screaming, like, no, don't burn them. We don't know what those rocks are. It's never given an explanation. All we know is that it's very culturally important to the Wookiees.
Yeah.
And it's just a set piece. But still, like, those
it's
little
very,
rocks.
It's very Avatar-like. It reminds me of Avatar.
And, like, those, like, carved rocks, like, they could have been grave markings. They could have been like this or that or something. Like, we don't know what those rocks are, but all we know, it was very important to that Wookiee.
Yep.
And the Trandoshan knew to destroy that cultural thing.
Just to be a jerk. Yeah.
Just to be a jerk. And there's like little things like that in the episode that are really well done, that have no explanation. And we don't need the hand holding of it. They just
trust
the audience
to like
pick up on it.
Man, I hope they start murdering these guys pretty soon.
Yeah, they are basically coming in and destroying like cultural artifacts.
Yeah.
So, I guess like now that I think about it, that kind of still works in the theme of this season, which is the Bad Batch are looking for their own version of home, which we know they eventually get to Pabu eventually, but like they're kind of like in this like floaty sort of area where. They're trying to find
Their home is underwater, you know, it got sunk under the water, you know, so.
And in a way, their home was the Republic, and it was the Jedi, and it was this war, and it was Kamino, and now it's all gone. And so, like, in a way, they're a lot like Gungi. Like, they don't really know where they fit in either. Like, they're kind
of
going
They're worse off than Gungi. Gungi at least has a planet that he can pinpoint, you know, and.
Yeah,
and Gungi's also got Jedi training, so he'll be able to like figure out how to get back into.
He's probably more in tune with the Force of Kashyyyk than a lot of normal Wookiees.
If he isn't right that second, as it goes along, he will be. You know.
Yeah.
Because you could tell he was just sort of like, okay, I'm gonna put my head on the tree like everybody else. But who knows if he was actually, you know, if he actually knew what they were doing or what they were, you know, thinking.
But it was, remember at the end of that scene, it's Gungi that runs up to the Bad Batch and goes, the trees have a plan. He picked up on it, like, immediately. Like, he's the one that picked up on it. And so, like, it's, like, talking about, like, Gungi having this, like, Jedi version of, like, the I can never say the word right, diaspora, the clones are kind of having their own version of diaspora. Like, they don't know where they fit in either, because their culture is gone. Their brothers are, like, off the deep end. They don't have a home either. Like, that's kind of what this season is. It's them figuring out, like, what is home? What is our lives? What is our future? Like, where's our culture? Like, do we even want to keep this clone version of our culture? Like, we're clones. What does that mean to be a clone in this world, new world? And I just, like, yeah, I think that's interesting. This is a very good, like, it rhymes with each other episode. Did you have any other notes?
Nope, that's it.
Vidimar punching spiders is funny to me.
Yeah.
I just thought... It's so funny. Like, they all just surround him, and they're, like, they're not touching him, they're not hurting him, they just surround him, and he punches one, and then the spiders punch him back.
This is a mashup of a lot of things. He's basically, like, from the, like, one of the Predators from the Predator movies, you know? He's like, well, I got all my weapons stripped from me, I guess I just have to punch and claw my way out of this.
Yeah, it just made me laugh that he was just like, I'm just gonna... These spiders are doing nothing to me. I'm just gonna punch a spider now. And then the moment he touches one, the spider punches him back.
Punch around and find out. That's the old saying.
I had to go back and rewatch the scene because I went, is that what just really happened? Is he punched a spider in the face and the spider punched him back? Sure enough, that's how he dies. He punches a spider. And that's his downfall. And it made me laugh.
And these spiders, like, spiders usually have, like, little pointy claws and stuff in shows like this. This one, they have little pads at the end. They're kind of blunt, so they're just, like, beating him up with, like, boxing gloves, basically. Yeah.
It just made me laugh so much. So, anyway. So, my first actual note that's not about punching spiders. They don't really dive into it in this episode, but my reading of the subtext of this episode is Hunter could not fully save Kanan in episode one of the show. When Order 66 happened, he was with Caleb Doom, who would eventually become Kanan Jarrus, and him and Crosshair is trying to kill this child, and Hunter is like, why are we killing children? And he doesn't even know if Kanan is alive. All he knows is that Kanan got away. But he doesn't even know if Kanan's even alive. And so I do feel like this episode, in a way, was kind of healing for Hunter. Because
gave him a little closure.
Yeah, I think it did. Because he got Gunji home. He did at least get one child home. Even if he doesn't know where the other child is. And I do think that that is a little bit, like, because keep in mind, Hunter's usually the one that's like, no adventures, we're not doing dangerous things, we're not going out there.
You could sense at the beginning of this that everybody but Omega and Wrecker were kind of like, and then they're like, they sort of wanted to go in that no adventure sort of thing, like. But they were
until
just
until the lightsaber came out.
Yeah, they're just like, we gotta do this, you know. So
because when Gunji lights his lightsaber, the next shot is actually Hunter like perking up and lowering his gun. Like he realizes that moment. And after that, he's the one that goes to Gunji. He's the one that goes, we are not the clones that you think of. He is the one that does that bridge. He is the one that talks to Yada. Like, this is Hunter going, I'm going to get this child home. Because I did not get the last child home. But I will get this one home. And like, it's such a different version of his character, because usually they have to drag Hunter kicking and think of last episode with Fee. Hunter like kicked rocks and moped for 22 minutes. Like, he did not want to be there, and he made sure everybody knew he did not want to be there. But this one, like, he's so proactive, and I do think it is because it's closure, because he could not save Caleb Doom, but he was going to save Gunji. And sorry, my phone just like buzzed as a text.
Well, once they got down on the planet, they were fugitives and they had a Jedi with them. So they basically had to like fight their way out of it no matter what, you know. That so once they got onto the planet, it was pretty much you pretty much had to commit to killing some Transdoshans. Murderings, shall we say.
Casually, as long as and not
toasting them, some would say. Some people say that.
Yeah, extra toasty. So
toasty.
But yeah. That is my Hunter reading of this episode, because unlike last episode where they had to drag him into a venture, like, he was running headfirst into this one. I think that's a very interesting change. And I do think it's kind of a good first step for Hunter as well, going into my next note. Like, Echo finally gets to fight the Empire in this episode, and he's just like, yes, 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 yes. And we know in the next two, the mid-season finale, which is the next two episodes, Echo's going to leave, and he's going to leave and go join Rex, because he's actually going to be, he's been kicking and screaming all season trying to fight the Empire. But I do think that it is a good first step for Hunter, because Hunter, he talks about it with Yana, Hunter knows that as long as the Empire is around, his family is not safe. As long as the Empire is here, Omega is not safe. These kids cannot be kids under this regime, especially since Omega is number one on their hunting list. They will not stop until they find her. And this is, I think, the first, like, even though he still kind of kicks, like takes his time for a good chunk of the show until we get into well into season three, this is kind of that first realization of him going, I'm eventually going to have to fight. We are eventually going to have to fight the Empire. Eventually. And this was that first little taste of that as well. And so I do actually think this is a really good Hunter episode, even if it's not blatant on the surface. He gets closure. He gets his first real taste of, like, full rebellion, fighting for other people, using his skills for a cause and to help protect his family. Like, I do think this is, like, a secretly good Hunter episode. So, the is Omega Force sensitive debate is an interesting one, because we also know that later in season 3, Asajj Ventress shows up and is also testing Omega for Force sensitivity. And this was a big, this episode, Tribe, was a big one where people are like, oh, is Omega Force sensitive? Like, she's doing the tree ritual with Gunji and blah, blah, blah. I don't think any of that matters. Whether or not Omega's Force sensitive is not the important part of the story.
If she was, she probably would have gone like, Hunter, I talked to the trees. You know, that would be like, with it, her character would be like, she would be like, the trees can actually talk, and I talked to them. You know, she would react to it, you know, in a more... Not to saying that she might not be force sensitive. I mean, there's definite reasons to believe that she possibly could be, just because of her her origins that we know of, you know, or, you know, where she was coming from.
And it's been a hot minute since I've seen season 3, but if I remember correctly, her blood is the binder needed to attach midichlorians to clones. Her blood is that binder, if I remember correctly. Which is why when Nalase blows it all up in season 3, they lose all the cloning stuff and information, and that's why Rise of Skywalker happens the way it does, and the sequel trilogy happens the way it does, because Nalase took away all the information that they had, and Omega was never captured. Again, to our knowledge. Anyway, long story short, but what I do think is interesting about the whole, I don't think Omega's Force sensitive, but I do think that she's spiritual and she's opening herself up to spirituality, which I think is an interesting concept in Star Wars. And you don't have to be a Force user to be spiritual and to understand that there are these other forces at play. And these are a bunch of soldiers who have seen Jedi do things that are unexplainable. They're basically doing magic. And I just think it's a neat idea and concept in a show that is very, very, very light on Force users. We very rarely have Force users. But to have this, like, episode and concept of spirituality with a non-Force user like Omega, I just think that's, an interesting take that you don't have to be a Force user to be spiritual. And I think she has that understanding of there are bigger forces happening around her on Kashyyyk, and she doesn't have to talk to the trees to understand and know that something bigger than her is happening. And yeah.
You know what? If she got a blood transfusion from a Jedi for any reason, wouldn't all the midichlorians just like stick to her? Right? They would take to her blood. So if she ever get, maybe in the future we'll have Omega gets injured in battle and gets a Jedi transfusion and just gets midichlorianed up.
I actually read a fan fiction where Anakin gives Rex a blood transfusion and because he got wounded in a battle and then Rex was force sensitive. But I bet he
gave him more than a blood transfusion.
So like it was very
I know about the stories you read.
This was actually not a dirty one. It was actually about Rex being like, am I a Jedi now? What the fuck? Like, why can I hear things? What's happening to me? And that was God forever. But I actually think one of the creators, I don't think it was Filoni, it might have been Gilroy, but one of the animation creators did confirm that that's not how the Force works, and that's not how midichlorians work. So a Jedi like Anakin could donate blood and give it to Rex, but Rex's body wouldn't take it. I don't remember where I read that, but I do know that that is confirmed somewhere by one of the creators, but I do not remember who. Somebody correct me if you know off the top of your head, though. My last note. I do feel like the Bad Batch as a whole, but very specifically this episode for sure, is George Lucas's final stamp on the franchise. Because the Bad Batch, especially this episode, came from when he was still making Star Wars, when he was still making Clone Wars. This was the ideas and concepts for this episode and for the Bad Batch, and all came from pre-Disney acquisitions. He was still in the day-to-day with Dave Filoni making Star Wars and making episodes. And this episode, you said it yourself, that this episode felt more Clone Wars than anything Disney. And it does feel like this episode was kind of closing that chapter because it does feel very Lucas-inspired.
I don't think we'll ever see a final stamp. There's bound to be more stamps eventually here and there. We'll get stamped again. I don't think you could ever be able to have George Lucas's final stamp on Star Wars. I mean, Andor was filled with some George Lucas stamps.
But I guess what I mean is like this show does close that era because The Bad Batch was one of the last concepts and ideas that Lucas worked on before selling Disney. Like, he came up with their sketches and their ideas and worked with Filoni to put them in would have been later seasons of the original run of the show. That's what I mean is that, like, it's wrapping up that era of a time that Lucas was actually actively working in Star Wars. And this episode does feel very different from other episodes in the show.
I also think as long as Filoni's involved, Filoni is sort of ended up being the official understudy of George Lucas. Mm-hmm. He seemed to be like, they created. Yeah. So, you know, as long as Filoni's involved, they'll also be, you know, Lucas-y stuff coming through.
Mm-hmm. But that's all I have for this episode. Do you have anything else?
I do not.
All right, well, score it up for me.
I gave it a 9. I really liked it. Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. As much time as I can spend on Kashyyyk, I'm happy. I could have had this be a double-size episode. I would have been really happy, but. And I was also happy that we were on Kashyyyk and we were on it for 2/3 of the show. So we got a good look at it. And that's what I've wanted, you know, beyond like you know, a few battle shots from the prequels and some interior shots in the holiday special, you know. So yeah, I'm a very happy camper. Niner.
I probably would have given it a 9 if I didn't rate other personal favorite episodes higher, but I do think this is one of the best episodes of season 2, hands down. This is one of the best really episodes of the second season. It does a lot of great things for the characters. It brings up unanswered questions from the Clone Wars. It brings back Gungi, who we now know is safe and alive. It opens up other questions, like, then where are the rest of the kids? Probably dead. They're probably not with us anymore. But it does a lot of good, like, exploring, like, spirituality and, like, moving Hunter's character forward. And, all around, I just really, even though I didn't have the most notes for this episode, there's just, like, a lot of, like, really good stuff. Like, and, I think I had more notes.
All the stuff is all show and not tell, too. It all just happens. Nobody's explaining everything or anything. It just goes, which I love that when Star Wars does that.
I think I had more episode for more notes for the last episode, Entombed, but I think this is a better episode than Entombed.
Yes, even though I had more notes for the last episode than there was in Entombed. But this one is as just a function of what drives the Bad Batch and the way it works. I think this is a better show than that because it's just the way it's put together. You know, it's it feels like a piece. You know, and it is. It's just sort of a pocket episode, but it's got its own tone to it and feel to it. I like it.
And I like that it also takes a story that we've seen over and over and over and over and over in Star Wars. Like, we've seen the story from the point of view of the Jedi versus the clones and, like, that post-Order 66. But getting the story of the clones seeing a Jedi post-Order 66, like, we haven't had that, really, from their point of view. So it does also, like, kind of revitalize this very tired and used story and Star Wars, and like gives it a kind of a fresh spin on it too, so it makes it feel like it's new. So like, it's just a really well done episode as well. So, well, as always, we would love to hear your feedbacks on iTunes, Blue Sky, or the Two True Freaks Facebook page, or our Discord channel, which is free to join. You can just find a link to the show notes, and honestly, everything's coming mostly for the Discord. I haven't had any iTunes reviews or Blue Sky questions or Facebook comments, so it's all coming from the Discord channel. You should come hang out with us because the others are dying and horrible, but Discord is great. Discord is cool. This week, our feedback comes from our Discord channel from Gene Gene, the podcast machine.
All right, so we...
No, I thought you were going to do the song.
Ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-bop song?
Gene, yeah. Oh, yeah, said okay. Gene Gene, the podcast machine.
Okay, from, well, we'll get another crack at it coming up soon.
Yeah. That was our practice round. But in one of our past episodes, we were having a discussion about Sean Ingle, who is our friend who had passed away. He's one of the earlier founders of Two True Freaks. And we had been talking about Sean and Gene. And actually, fun fact, I guess not fun fact, but sad fact, our first episode of Jake Guys and Jedi is actually dedicated to Sean Ingle. So, this comes from Gene talking about John. So anyway, take it away, Chris. I'm going to eat this M&M.
Oh. So Gene says, also, Chris being mentioned in the same breath as Sean is a great honor. Completely undeserved, but still an honor. And Chris says, completely undeserved. We're having this conversation in the Discord you built and maintain. And Gene, ever the humble Gene, Gene Gene the Humble Machine, says, nothing like Sean's contribution, but I appreciate the sentiment.
So was this my excuse?
I forgot that I had a voice for Gene. It's been so long since I've done a Gene voice.
Was this just a very thinly veiled attempt to send some love towards Gene because we adore Gene and he does so much for the Two True Freaks and our show in so much. Yes, this was a thinly veiled attempt to give some compliments and love to Gene. Congrats. We love you, Gene. Thank you for all you do.
I just see the art teacher that was played by John Lovitz in the early Simpsons, who goes, "I do not take compliments well, Marge."
You know, I feel that. Samesy. Oh my god, me too, bestie. Bad Batch season 2. So, if you don't have anything else for Tribe, where can people find you, Chris?
Yeah, you can find us TwoTrueFreaks.com. That's our main place to go, and that's the place to go to get your RSS feeds if you really want to get Two True Freaks, because it seems like Apple Podcasts is being a
dick.
Big pain in the ass.
Oh my
big
God.
Pain in the ass.
So
all our podcasts are there. All the Two True Freaks podcasts are there, just sitting there waiting for you, waiting for you. And you can, if you're on Facebook, you can just search for Two True Freaks, and you can find the Two True Freaks podcast page where we list up all the podcasts that we post. Not me anymore, because I'm not on Facebook anymore. They've locked me out. I think they don't like that I don't have a phone. I think that's what it is.
Probably.
I think I had a phone number on my Skype years ago that I provided a phone number for, and somewhere on that they probably tried to text message a code for me to get back into Facebook on a phone number that I'll never have again since Skype is defunct. So anyway, but if you're on Facebook, you can see that, and you can go to the Two True Freaks Cantina, which is our hangout space. Or if you're feeling really brave, you can still find the Two True Freaks on Twitter. Where the humble Gene Hendricks will guide you to all our new episodes as they come up.
Eat all your humble pie, Gene.
Anyway, that's where they can find me. Where can they find you, Hope?
You can find me on Blue Sky at JGuysandJedi, even though I've been really bad at maintaining our page because I've been trying to figure out this fucking feed thing. Sorry for everybody who listens on Apple Podcasts, really. If you're an Apple Podcast listener, thank you for your patience as I, in my small amount of spare time, try to figure out what the fuck is happening. But you can also find me on Blue Sky at Hope Molinex as well. I will say in our Discord, when I asked what do people listen to our show on, if you're an Apple Podcast listener who happens to be listening on the feed or the website, some people listed some other places that they've been hearing. So if that's easy for you, please go do that there. Again, I'm sorry, I'm trying to figure it out. You can also find me on Blue Sky at Hope Molinex. I am a writer for the Geeky Waffle. I am almost done with one friend's book because my friend Arzu has released a novel called The Arusi Arrangement. I'm almost done with it. I am at 91%. I have about 40 pages left, actually more like 35 pages left before I'm done with her book, which is exciting because I'm planning to talk about it on the Geeky Waffle and review it. And then after that, I will be reading another friend's book because listener of the show, Charles, his next book in Beach House Studios, he has sent me an advance copy. So I am looking forward to finishing one and then jumping in the other. So be on the lookout for those reviews over on the Geeky Waffle. I also have a few pieces I've been planning for Hasbin Hotel, so if you like that show, I'm thinking about writing about it over there too as soon as I get free time, so yeah. I am also on for Light and Dice. It is a Star Wars TTRPG podcast set in the High Republic. You don't need to know anything about the High Republic, and guess what? We have officially scheduled our Season 2 finale session, so that is coming up. I am excited. I hope no one dies. I am nervous as all get out. Hopefully no one dies. I am scared. We'll see what happens. No one die. Please. I don't know if my little heart can take it. So that is coming up. So you can find me over on For Light and Dice and the Geeky Waffle. And yeah, so. All right. Well, we started with Hot Watto and ended with whatever the hell this is. So. next
Hot Waddle and Slurmcore. That's what we started out with.
Oh, yeah. God, that was like 2 hours ago. I've eaten M&M since then.
Listen to your Slurmcore, people. I'm telling you.
Yeah. Well, next time, we will be talking about part one of the mid-season 2 finale of The Bad Batch. And we'll get to see the return of one of my personal favorite characters from The Clone Wars, Miss Ryo Chuchi. I love her. Her outfit's great. I adore her. And we will be talking about the clone conspiracy next time. All right.
Excellent.
Excelente.
We will see you then.
I just remember I just really like season 2, guys. Season 2 of Bad Batch is really fucking good. Just really fucking good. So, really, really good. I like Bad Batch season 2. It's okay. So, anyway,
Let's not have you griping through season 3, though.
Oh, I'm going to be insufferable come season 3. So, right. Absolutely insufferable. And I think my cat needs to... He just finally jumped out of the chair, and he's walking over to the door, which is closed, which means he cannot open it, so I need to go let my cat out, so...
All right.
Bye, everybody!
Let your people go. Bye, everybody.
Bye!
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS. Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.